Welcome to Chapter 28, called Practicing the Presence, of the 1955 Kailua Study Group. Now, this chapter is going to be, it's going to add just a little bit of work to that which we have already been doing. And to review that, we have been, hopefully, practicing up to 12 times a day, going within to make the contact, simply closing our eyes and realizing something such as, "Thy grace is my sufficiency," and resting back until we feel the actual movement or the descent of spirit. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, if you haven't experienced it, continue on, and you will. To that was added, wherever there is a discord, whenever we are confronted with a discord, we are to do the same thing. We are to say, no answer to that. Close our eyes and simply rest in "Thy grace is my sufficiency," or "Father, thy grace," until we feel that movement, that presence. And then we are to realize that, well, after we sit there a moment or two longer and rest in it, we are to open our eyes, go about our business, and realize that God's on the scene, and get busy with something else, even if it's something simple like baking a pie. And now in this chapter, he's going to add something else. Aren't we just so blessed? It turns out that praying without ceasing really means praying without ceasing, doesn't it? Okay, so he starts us out with a couple of questions that are pretty common questions. One is, if there really is a God, how can there be so much sin and suffering and pain and lack and limitation and wars and abuse, man's inhumanity to man on earth? And he says, as Infinite Way students, we should know the answer to this. And didn't you know the answer without turning the page? I bet you did. Why, that is because you are well versed in the letter of truth. And so the answer is, if you dwell in the secret place of the Most High, none of these things can come nigh your dwelling place. But when you lose that word or let it out of your consciousness, when you do not hold that word in consciousness, then you are as a branch that is cut off and withereth. The law says that we are punished even if we don't know what the law is. Only as an activity of truth takes place in your consciousness individually do you become separate from the inequalities of human living, the discords and inharmonies. There is no outside God. It has nothing to do with an outside God. It has to do with an activity of truth in your consciousness. That is why one person may be a better healer than another, because the one person is maintaining themselves in a higher degree of conscious union with God than the other is. So the responsibility always rests within ourselves as to what degree of conscious union we maintain with our source. You see, it's a matter of consciousness. Which one are you dwelling in? It is up to you, not God. Are you dwelling in human consciousness, which looks through the eyes of duality at everything it sees? Or have you practiced these 12 times a day and you're feeling a conscious union with God and you're looking through that oneness? Which consciousness are you in? So your life is your responsibility, isn't it? Which consciousness am I living in today? The responsibility is on us, not on God. So the answer to the question, which is, how can there be so much suffering on earth if there is a God? It's because there is no God on earth. Not on the earth that's the human consciousness, but there is a God in the earth of those who are walking in conscious union, because they're walking in heaven. So it's not the place, is it? It's the consciousness. Now, he says, only as an activity of truth takes place in your consciousness do you become free. But we know now that an activity of truth does not mean words or thoughts about truth. That is why it is said, I am the truth. And so this I, it is that must be active in your consciousness. We see that? Do you see that? All right. The next question is, how can there be a God and all of these discords in the world? And he says it outright here, there is a God, but there is no God in this world. That's kind of, feels kind of bleak, doesn't it? That was his original revelation or realization. He said he was standing on a corner in Europe and the world war was about to begin. And he thought, how can this be with a church on nearly every corner? And that was the original revelation. This can be because there is no God in this world. My kingdom is not of this world. Which world do you live in? Do you live in a world that's governed by duality, good and evil, universal beliefs? Or have you come up over that? And are you resting now at least 12 times a day, and also with any discord that confronts you, to the point where you're feeling a conscious union with God? And if you are, then you're walking in a different world, a different dimension. The kingdom of heaven is at hand, and you have stepped into it. Now, I know from my experience of making talks and putting them online, or typing out messages and sending them online, people do not want to hear that there is no God in this world. It's very disturbing. But it's true. You know these things couldn't be in the presence of God. So it's necessary that we face that. We can't make any real progress until we face that. That fear that comes with the realization that, hey, I'm out here alone. There is no God anywhere out here. No. And yet, at the same time, God is omnipresent. Isn't that a strange thing? Joel has said that millions of times. God is omnipresent. So there's no place where God isn't, and yet there's no God in this world. Isn't that a strange thing? How do you bring those two together? How do you reconcile that? Well, Joel tells us here, God does not enter the affairs of men except through the consciousness of the children of God. So, there is no God until you permit it to flow through your consciousness. So God doesn't enter our affairs except as we allow God to flow through our consciousness, or except as God flows through the consciousness of His children. Now, so the next question is, are we the children of God? Are we? We read pretty poetic things, how we're all the children of God. And God loves His children so. And then we go out and get in a multi-car pileup in which people lose their members. You have to reconcile this with yourself. No, we're not the children of God until the Spirit dwells in us. If so be that the Spirit of God dwells in you, then are you the children of God, and not before. Before that, you're a human being living as a branch cut off. So you see, these 12 periods a day are pretty important. This is what makes you the child of God, or the instrument, or the vessel, or the transparency. It really is a dying to this world. It really is a dying to humanhood. It really is a becoming a state of receptivity, an opening, a transparency. It really is Christhood. It really is stepping into another dimension, the kingdom at hand. So, let us remember this. In proportion as we open our consciousness to the activity of God, just in that degree do we receive it, until that moment of transition when it takes over completely. And then from then on, we live in that atmosphere, and it is always living our lives, and we have no further concern. But up to that moment, the responsibility is on us. All right. Now, you see, really the whole thing is that we are, well, turn ye and live. We are turning away from humanhood, from duality, from this world in which there is no God. We're turning within to that kingdom, that realm within. We are resting there. That's the place where God exists. And we know it because we feel it. We commune with it. We have union with that presence within our being. And it's upon us, and we know it. And there's a release from the thoughts and things of this world. And in that release, in that peace that passes understanding, we are dwelling in the realm of God, the kingdom of God. And we open our eyes and we see, hey, it has an effect on my life out here. My life is conforming to the pattern. Within, it's becoming harmonious. Grace is coming to me from different directions. A grace I didn't even plan. I never believed was possible. You see, your inner being and your outer expression are becoming one. You're leaving this world. You're stepping into another realm. You're standing side by side with your neighbor, but your neighbor cannot see into this realm, the realm in which you're standing. You may be 3 feet apart, but you're living in two entirely different worlds. Now, he says, we may actually bring the presence and activity of God into our experience to such an extent that we have a wonderful healing. But that doesn't mean that we're going to have all harmony tomorrow, because in the early stages of our student days, disciple days, the very moment we have received the benefit of the activity of God, our thoughts go back to our human way of living, and our human concerns, and our human anxieties, and we shut ourselves off again. Now, what does that mean? That means that if we have not yet made the contact, we are living for the most part as a branch cut off. There's no God in our experience. So, what happens is we run into problems. Problems confront us. That's the nature of the world. It has nothing to do with us. It has nothing to do with, well, we've been bad or we haven't been good enough. It has nothing to do with that. That's the nature of the world. It's not your fault. So a problem comes and you're confronted with it. But now we're taking this approach where we're saying, no answer to that. No answer to this. And we're turning within and we're resting. Eventually we do feel that contact. And the problem dissolves. And we think how wonderful this is. How great. And then we get back busy with the world and we forget to make these 12 periods of contact a day because the fire's not turned up anymore. We don't have that problem confronting us. The burner's been turned down to a simmer. And so what's the big deal, you know? So we're not quite giving it the effort there was before. And what's the result? Well, you know, problems return. So then we get back busy again. That's the normal way of students. Eventually, though, we throw our whole self into this, and we reach that place where he says it's always living our lives and we have no further concern. But it takes a total dedication. He's got us now with the 12 periods a day and the discords up to about 20 times a day, doesn't he? Well, he told us eventually it would increase to 20 or 30. So now we're at 20. All right. He says we shut ourselves off again, and then in some trying moment, we reach out and establish that contact again. And again, we have a benefit. Then again, we go back to our human ways of living and thinking. And this goes on for a time until we awaken to the fact that we are having too many of these healings, and then discords, and then healings, and then discords. And we give a little more attention, probably a daily attention, to this union with God. Now, that's telling my experience, because I reached the place where I said, I'm tired of demonstration after demonstration after demonstration. I explained it before in one of my talks as spinning plates. If you've ever seen a guy on stage with those sticks and he's spinning plates and he gets these going smooth and he runs over there and gets, oh, that one's wobbling, and he gets that, oh no, that one's wobbling, and pretty soon he can't keep up with them, they start crashing to the stage. Oh, everybody thinks that's hilarious. It's not so hilarious when you're living it. Eventually you say, there's got to be another way. You go back to the books and you realize, oh my God, 20 or 30 times a day. Hey, Paul really meant that, praying without ceasing. He meant you become a walking receptivity. Yeah, and what are the human ways of living and thinking he's referring to? Well, we go back to fear, hate, or love of anything in this world. If you know there's two dimensions, and you know the doorway to the new heaven and the new earth, then it would behoove you to step into and through that doorway. Because when you go back to the earth where there's no God in it, there's just a bunch of beliefs, well, you return to fear, hate, and love of people, places, and things. Well, then he says we find that we're having quicker healings, better healings, more healings. We're having less need of healing because now the activity and realization of God is occupying more of our consciousness than it had been up to now. All right. As we continue in that way, that's the 20 periods a day he's got us at, we find that instead of giving 30 minutes a day to the realization of God, eventually we are dwelling in God for hours. I mean, 4 hours, 5 hours, 6 hours in a day. And in that degree, we are experiencing more of harmony, less of discords. And so that goes on until the first thing you know, we find that if we could measure a 24-hour day, probably the thought of God or the Christ or spiritual truth was active in us for 7, 8, 9, or 10 hours out of the 24. Now, you need to understand, he's not talking about sitting in a monastery someplace meditating for 7, 8, 9, 10 hours out of the 24. No, no, he's not talking about that at all. When you learn to make the contact, and as I learned to make the contact, I found out that I receive impartations. I might sit down and become still inside, make that contact, feel the spirit, feel the presence, and with it comes something like there is no this world in this world. And that goes with me. After I open my eyes, I'm contemplating that all day. What does that mean? What does that mean? Now, I have received dozens, hundreds, maybe thousands of impartations over the years. I have a journal full of them. So that occupies my mind as I'm walking around with eyes open, taking care of business. Then comes another period of quiet. I make the contact again. Maybe there's just a sense of peace. But that sense of peace stays with me through the next few chores that I have to do. Then I make the contact again. You see, this is praying without ceasing. The mind is stayed on God. All right, so that's what he means by 8, 9, or 10 hours a day. Many, many periods of making the contact for that 3 to 4 minutes, but also many periods of walking around in the conscious awareness of that contact, or consciously pondering, looking at the impartation that was received. In one way or another, our mind is stayed on God. You see that? He says, by that time, we are right on the verge where the balance swings over into the other side of the scale, and it takes us over. And then, we no longer have to give thought to it. We never have to think about making conscious contact with it. It has made contact with us, and it maintains itself as our consciousness. Now, I don't know if you understand what that means. Well, let's finish it, then we'll say that. It maintains itself as our consciousness, and then everything we do is a spontaneous action because it is its action expressed in and through us. And then none of these things come nigh our dwelling place. So we know where we're walking towards, don't we? In the beginning, we make a contact once or twice. No, in the beginning, we just get quiet and say the words. We don't even make the contact. And we think we're living by prayer, but we're not. Eventually, through troubles, the fire's turned up. We go back to the books. We learn how to pray aright. We learn that we have to make the contact. Then it happens one day. We feel it. Oh, wow. And, like Joel, it may go a couple weeks before we feel it again. But we do feel it again because we're practicing. Then we increase the amount of times we practice. We feel it more and more. And eventually, he says, we're up to 7, 8, 9, 10 hours a day out of the 24. And somewhere in there, he says, we're on the verge where the balance swings over to the other side. And it takes us over. We never have to think about it. It has made contact with us, and it maintains itself as our consciousness. So now that means we have traded in. Not completely, but for the most part, we have dissolved a major part of an individual human consciousness of duality of this world. Now, this inner Christ has become our consciousness. Our very own consciousness is the Christ. It is living us. Now, we are not the branch anymore trying to get connected. Now, I am the vine itself. From then on, I guarantee you, you're so busy you can hardly stand it because you're pouring out to all the others that still feel they are unconnected branches. All right. This is the path. We're on it. So, always have available the answer to the question, how can there be a God and all these discords too? Well, there can be these discords until God is made an activity of our individual consciousness. Until the Christ actually fills us and becomes the law unto us, the soul, the spirit, the consciousness, the animating principle of our being. Then we find heaven and earth are one. So there you have it right there. This is the complete path. We've done it in 3 pages. We can all go home now because we know what we must do, and there's nothing left but to do it. Well, nevertheless, let's continue with the chapter. That's the answer when you find heaven and earth are one. Who transformed it? You did. By going within. So, you see, we live in our own state of consciousness. This was the impartation I got when I meditated on this. Listen. We live in our state of consciousness. We do not live in a world. Did you know that? Did you know that you don't live in a world? You live in a state of consciousness? Well, we've read it before, but now perhaps we understand really what it means. Now he says the next question is, how come I've been asking and praying for years and I haven't received? And of course, the answer is you ask amiss. First he goes into what a righteous man is, and I feel that's important. He says, in the spiritual sense, a righteous man is a reliance upon the infinite invisible for those things the world seeks from men, or things or conditions. The righteous man would be the man who would say, don't fight, stand still, and see the salvation of the Lord, or rest until you feel a release. So we know he was a righteous man, don't we? The righteous man, according to spiritual standards, would never have his vision going out to man whose breath is in his nostril for anything. He still would have in his mind the fact that spirit is the source, the substance, and the reliance, and my vision is in that direction. So the spiritually righteous man may have all the good things of life, houses, homes, yachts, fine cars, and everything else, and enjoy them. And yet, he would find his inner life to be his reality. That would be his reaction. Enjoy these things today if they're here, but don't be concerned tomorrow if they are not. So getting back to the question, the subject of ask, knock, comes back to the correct sense of prayer. The actual spiritual prayer is complete silence. Now, but we understand something here now, don't we? Silence is not an absence of sound. Silence is refraining from personal sense. Ah, absence from personal sense, present with God. Now here's what he says. Actual spiritual prayer is complete silence, refraining from desire, refraining from seeking, refraining from words and thoughts. It becomes a state of receptivity. It becomes a quiet, as if listening. There is only one desire, and that is for this feeling of union, this awareness of oneness. All right, so silence is not an absence of sound. Silence is refraining from any personal sense. Ah. To have that feeling with an object in mind defeats it. God itself, the object of our desires, is the only desire we can have. Now, what is it that you are to receive? Well, if the answer is anything but God, then your prayer is amiss. And he says, the world for some reason cannot seem to grasp that. But as a matter of fact, in attaining God, you go a step above health and wealth. In attaining God, there is no such thing as health, and there is no such thing as wealth. Have you meditated on that? Have you contemplated on that? There's a great secret in that. Always, always, in all of his books, at some point, he says we must go beyond the opposites to being. And so in God, there is no health. There is no wealth. There's only the infinity of harmony. There is no sense of lack of any nature. There is no sense of anything to be attained. There is a state of self-completeness when God has been attained, because you're above the pairs of opposites which make up this world. God's not going to give you more of this world. Surely you understand that by now. This world is the world you're stepping out of. So what's God going to give you? God is going to give you the kingdom. It's His good pleasure to give you the kingdom, not more of this world. And so you accept the offer, and in your contact, God gives you itself, and you feel a release from needing anything in this world. And you experience the harmony, the peace that passes understanding, and you just swim in it sometimes. You just marvel at it. Now, when you open your eyes, that appears out here as better or improved forms. Why? Because the mind is still busy. It's still busy. So when you feel that peace and that harmony within, and you open your eyes, there's the mind interpreting it as better matter. But God didn't give you the better matter. That's more mind stuff. That's still this world. That's why He says, if it's here, enjoy it. If it's not, don't worry about it. The goal is that, well, the goal is God itself and the kingdom. So God is itself the all and everything of being, and in attaining God, there is nothing left to attain. Nobody can explain that to you. Nobody can define that or analyze it for you. That is something you have to feel. And that important word again, which means realization, feel with your spiritual discernment that in having God, you have it all. Now, don't be afraid to enjoy any of these things out here. I know I do. If I go on a vacation and I'm sitting by the seaside and listening to the waves and listening to a talk on my MP3 player, I love it. Nothing wrong with that. But that's not God's grace. God's grace was the contact I made. That's just the mind's interpretation of that contact, you see? So I'm not after that. I don't seek after that. I seek the contact, and then I enjoy the things, the forms that it appears as. But I recognize that the appearance is not it. It is it. All right. So in finding God, they'll find harmony included. And then will come the end of the search for God. The moment we come to the realization that God itself is the object of our search and for no purpose, in that moment comes the realization, I am in the midst of thee. Where thou art, I am. Where I am, thou art, for we are one. And this is how it comes to each one of us. There is a peace that passeth understanding. Now, that's a promise. He just made a promise to you. The moment you can come to God with the realization that God is the object of your search and for no other purpose than making that contact, then you will have the inner realization or feel that I am in the midst of thee. Where thou art, I am. Where I am, thou art, for we are one. You will feel that. You will feel a peace that passes understanding. That's a promise. But you have to fulfill the condition. Very often, people misunderstand the mystical way of life because they believe it is a do-nothing, or accomplish-nothing, or sit on the mountaintop, or by the seaside and dawdle. Now, that is not true. To live in the peace that passes understanding without desire brings one such activities as eventually one can say, I don't even have time to get it all done. But there is no stress or strain. Everything is accomplished in and with and through an inner peace. Okay. We hear that. We hear that online and other places. We hear people say, I'm just going to meditate and become one with God, and God is all. And we immediately, a red flag goes up, and we a warning goes off and we know, something's not right. Why? Because when you become a transparency, God is going to make you very, very busy. Because God seeks such as that. God seeks instrument, vessel, transparency. It's a love affair. One mystic said that all you have to do is become empty of self and automatically you're full of God. God seeks that opening. So you're going to be busy. You're not going to be sitting around, I guarantee you. Again, he says, I find it very difficult to explain, but I can say this. If we could find a moment when we're alone to put all of our human cares out of our thought in the realization, yes, I can truthfully say, at this moment, I will be satisfied if I achieve the realization of God. Just for the sake of sitting here this next hour or next 5 minutes, seated right in the heart of God, whether or not it would come at that very moment, it would eventually come. What would come? Well, he said it here. Where thou art, I am. Where I am, thou art. I am in the midst of thee. And the peace that passes understanding. That's the promise. And if one remained that way for a few minutes each day, eventually that peace would descend, and one would find themselves wrapped in God, enfolded in God, even though it lasted only a moment or two or three. But continuing that practice would bring the moment when the transition would take place and the realization or the feel would come. This is it. This is it. And then from then on, every bit of work given one to do would be done as if God were doing it or performing it. Sure, because that presence, he performeth that which he appoints for you to do. All right. Are you ready? He's giving us another assignment. He's going to get us up to 30 times a day, I guarantee you, by the end of this little book here, he's going to get us up to 30 times a day. All right, so now, so far, we have 12 times a day in which we are turning within to make that contact. We have, say, another 8 times a day when we're confronted with a discord, ours or somebody else's, in which we say, no answer to this, and go within to make the contact. Because as he said in the other chapter, the impartation is what heals. Now, because that's not enough, he's going to add something else. So each one of us must, even if we begin with one period a day and gradually increase it, so there it is, gradually increase it. He's going to have us up to 30 times a day. Each one of us must have such periods for the realization of the Christ. We must have this period with no object, with no desire to attain anything for ourselves, not even a healing. But we must go beyond that. We must not even be praying for our friends, neighbors, enemies, or for the world. We must have no object whatsoever except the attaining of the realization of the activity of the Christ. So, he's adding another period of meditation to our 12 times a day and our meeting discords. Now, one time a day, we are to do nothing but let God flow through, and that for nothing. One period a day, and then increase that. So, this is what Joel suggests to us, the students. Yeah, if he gets into world work here, we'll be up to 22 or 3, huh? In one of these chapters. Don't you think he's not doing this? Because, well, remember he said you become, through the practice of this, you become a walking state of receptivity. So you don't have to make the contact 20 or 30 times a day. You're always in contact. You are that contact. You're the Christ, which is God individualized as your consciousness flowing through. I don't know about you, but I can't wait till the balance swings the other way. All right. Now, he explains a principle here. He says, if I were just to be selfish enough to think of myself and desire only that I have the realization of the activity of the Christ here and now, I would automatically be placing you in the presence of Christ, wouldn't I? Sure, you don't have to be doing any healing work. All you have to do is turn within for that Christ to flow. And when you make the contact, it flows. It just flows. And anyone near you benefits from it, don't they? Because they're in the presence not of you, but the presence of Christ. That is why I say, if we are in a group of people who, without having any object in mind, merely set out to attain the conscious realization of the presence and power of Christ, we will then not only be having that which will be a fulfillment to our experience, but unto everyone who touches the hem of our robe, whether or not we even know they have touched the hem. Do you see that? Do you understand that? Just being in your presence, they are benefited because, well, like a light in the darkness, you benefit just being near that light, near that candle, don't you? So I send you all out as candles in the darkness. You don't even have to do anything but make the contact, and you'll be blessing. You will be a blessing. That which flows through you as your consciousness will be a blessing. So that is the point I have tried for a long time to convey, but without success, he says. I have never been successful, except with a few individuals, of getting across the idea that God is itself the object of our search, and for no other reason than God. We have no need of the activity of the Christ to do something. We only have need of the activity of the Christ. It itself will do the doing. All right, so now you've got another job ahead of you to have at least one period a day in which you release the Christ for no reason at all. Now, seeking God must be just that, seeking God, not seeking God and something. Try, and this is for all of you who are listening to these recordings, try to imagine what would happen if you, at this very moment, could feel within yourself the very presence and power and activity of the Christ. If at this very moment Christ should touch you and say, here I am, where do you think I've been? I am beside you. I am within you. I am the presence that goes before you. Now, I know this, he says, in any moment that I have an actual realization or contact with the presence of God, somebody in our student body gets healed or supplied or benefited or enlightened or realizes the Christ. I know that. I've watched it over the years, and so I know this, that I have had at times reached out to some of my own students for help. And when they have realized the Christ and had the actual feeling, which is realization, of the presence, I have been lifted up. I know that too. He's driving this point home, that we don't go into meditation to use Christ. I told you the story of the two dogs barking. What finally turned that around was when I had the realization, wait a minute, I can't use spirit. Now, Spirit, you use me. And then there was an instantaneous feeling of the presence, and the dogs disappeared. I don't know to this day where they went. I haven't heard them since. So, he's driving this point home. You're not to go into meditation for a reason. Now, you may still go into meditation when you're confronted with a discord for a reason, and that reason would be to recognize that there's no answer out here to this. I must go within and rest in the presence and see what the presence has to say. That would be your only reason. But now he wants you to have a contact to see what that Christ does when you have no reasons, when you're not trying to use it, but you're creating an opening so that it may use you. And so he says, I know it would be an impossibility for you to actually experience a feeling of God's presence and not have somebody during the day say that they were benefited just by visiting with you or talking with you. All right? You get it? Have that period, at least one now, in which you seek nothing except that contact for no reason whatsoever, and just invite it to flow. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is liberty. Where the Spirit of the Lord is, the conscious presence of God is, there is freedom. Freedom in Christ, spiritual freedom, which to our sense would mean freedom from sin, disease, death, lack, and limitation. So watch what a miracle this is. What a rest comes to you, mental and physical rest, the moment you achieve that realization of the presence. And if you've had that realization, that experience within, you know how it feels. It's a, oh, thank you. Yes, there's nothing finer anywhere. Anywhere. And it releases you. You have a rest that comes over you. So, you will understand why the Master could say, I have overcome the world. He didn't have a single problem in the world when he had attained Christhood. Not a one. Because there wasn't anything that could come nigh that state of consciousness. The weight that drops off your shoulders is just wonderful. It would seem as if the whole world fell off of your shoulders. All of this drops away. And that is the first time in your life you can truthfully say that you are without a thought. You know what it means to take no thought. You haven't anything to think about. You have only a rejoicing, an inner joy, an inner pleasure, and yet for no reason. And that's the truth. It's exactly how it feels, and you can take all of that and put one word across it. Release, or two words, the release. It's a release from personal everything. It's a release from this world. I told you before, you're going to walk out of this world first in your meditations, every time you experience that release. Eventually, according to what Joel's telling us, and I have every reason to believe he's telling the God's honest truth, eventually you're going to walk out of this world for good, even while you're standing right here, because you're no longer going to be seeking God for anything. You're no longer going to be fighting any problems. You're no longer going to be trying to overcome. You're simply going to be a walking open door to the kingdom of heaven. You're going to be standing in the kingdom, feeling the presence, and allowing that presence to flow through you. And that, if that's not Christ, I don't know what is. The very moment that that Spirit touches us and we know that it's there, that is the moment when our sins drop away. Sinful thoughts, fearful thoughts, doubtful thoughts, sickly thoughts, or painful thoughts, all that drops away with the realization of that presence. Alright, so he says, it may seem that I'm being very repetitious today, and undoubtedly I am. It is because of the necessity of catching the point. Now remember, if you haven't caught this point, listen to this talk again, read this, meditate on it, ponder it, ask for clarity. Because he says, in 1955, he has been not very successful in getting this point across. But I think he is today, and so does he. So there's a necessity of catching the point that the realization of Christ is the end of the demonstration. It's not the beginning of the demonstration. It isn't going to be the realization of Christ and then something happening. The realization of the Christ is the end of the demonstration, because it is the fullness of the demonstration itself. Do you see that? Yes, we said that early in these talks. From now on, we have only one demonstration, the presence itself. It's a most wonderful thing. I hope everyone can have this feeling of the presence. All right. I have a feeling, he says, that you have caught today the reason why nothing further is necessary than the experience of the Christ itself. And I think that you will find you're much better equipped from this day on to turn your whole thought to that end. I have a feeling that it has registered, that it is the realization of the Christ itself that is the demonstration. And so let it rest there today. And to that I can only say, Amen. All right, so this chapter has added to us yet another period, only this for no reason whatsoever, but to be a transparency, to allow that Christ to flow. And we'll find, according to what he's telling us, this blesses people just by being in our presence. We never even have to open our mouth. We can keep our finger on our lips. When that contact has been made and they come into our presence, they're not in our presence now. They're in the presence of Christ itself. You see? I know you do. And he says by doing that, we're going to be really quite surprised. Here we were trying to channel God into our affairs or someone else's affairs, and it turns out we didn't have to do that. All we had to do was make the contact, and then the very fact that they're in our consciousness, they are blessed by our consciousness, which is now the Christ. All right, well, that's a wrap on chapter 28, which is a new way of practicing the presence. It's the way that was revealed to me a long time ago, and perhaps somewhat forgotten over the many years. So let us return to practicing the presence by adding another period, at least one, in which we make that contact and let it be the blessing itself. Thank you, and may you have that wonderful feeling of the presence itself. Good night.